Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Cashflow Positive. This is a part two episode of finding cashflowing deals in 45 days. I have a special guest with us. This is Sheila from STR Insight. She's one of our consultants. Sheila owns properties. I'm going to let her do her own introduction and tell us more about her because she will do it better than I can. I'm just excited to hear about her because she has a decent amount of properties and a decent amount of experience of helping people find properties. And so let's dive into it. So Sheila, welcome to the show and start out, give us a little intro about yourself.
Sure. Thanks, Kenny. My name's Sheila Herenda. I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I've been investing in real estate since about 2012 and full-time for about the last 8 years. Currently, I own 5 short-term rentals in multiple states and have a portfolio of midterm and long-term rentals as well, and also renovate and resell a few properties each year. So my prior life before that, I was a cost accountant for about 13 years in the construction industry, which has helped with my rehab background when I buy properties.
That's awesome. I did not know that last part. So I'll have some questions after this about that. So, all right. So when did you buy your first short-term rental?
I bought my first short-term rental actually in 2020.
Okay. All right. Yes. During the pandemic, after the pandemic?
During the pandemic.
Well, I guess like, I don't know, who knows how long the pandemic really was. It varied by state, right? Sure. So during the pandemic, you bought a short-term rental. And how long did it take you to find one?
The first one probably took a little bit longer than usual because we started looking right before everything happened. And we had to put it on hold for a little while. So it was probably about a 6-month process at that time.
Gotcha. Okay. 6-month process. And then now are you still buying short-term rentals?
I am. Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
In the process right now.
Yeah. So let's talk about that evolution. So you bought your first one. It took you 6 months. Did all the rest of them take you 6 months?
No, only the first one. First time I bought, I didn't have any real systems in place, figuring it out. I had purchased long-term rentals before, but short-term rentals are different. Takes a different kind of underwriting, different types of properties than I was used to buying. And I put a lot of research into it. And like a lot of other people, kind of got stuck in analysis paralysis there for a while until I really figured out a process that worked for me.
Love it. All right. Let's sit on that process for a while. So what changed to allow you to get to a point where you could find deals quicker? And obviously it probably built up over time, but I mean, you're teaching people how to do it now. So what, you mentioned the process. So let's dive into that. What's your process? Break it down for us.
Honestly, the most important part of the process is having a plan and understanding your own goals. I think that's one of the things, even talking to, some of my clients, I find is that people haven't always really established their own goals yet. The most common thing I hear, when I ask someone the first time I talk to them, what is your goal? What do you need to see out of this? And more often than not, I hear, maybe I need a 20% cash on cash return. And I say, why? Why do you need that? And a lot of times the answer is because I listened to so-and-so's podcast and they said that's a good number to be at. Yeah. And again, I go further into why. Why does that work for you? And the truth is a lot of people just don't know why that works for them or know what they actually need to meet their goals. So we dive really deep into that. And even with my first property, I knew where I want to be cash flow wise, but it's still a learning process. And what I learned as I bought each additional property is that I really needed to have a clear, laid out, concise plan of steps that I followed to be successful with that property in the end.
So how did you come up with that plan through your experience?
A lot of research. Learning from people around me that I talked to who already own short-term rentals, joining some masterminds, but it took a lot of time, you know, kind of having to recreate the wheel and come up with a process of my own that was repeatable that I could use in the future and that I still use now.
Gotcha. So let me ask you this. Markets have shifted. Interest rates have gone up. Housing prices have gone up. You just said that you have a repeatable process. So has the environment of, you know, short-term rentals being more competitive, maybe revenues dropping, rents dropping, has that changed your processes at all? Or like what, how have you adapted?
It has changed the markets I look in. I wouldn't say that it changed the processes. Processes, once you have them down, they're repeatable and they really work in any type of market as long as you understand the market. As long as you understand the interest rates and you understand the markets that you're looking at, how competitive they are, what you need to have in those markets to be successful. There's a lot of factors that go into it, but it really doesn't change the process.
Okay. So it sounds like, you know, it's really important to be adaptable in where you look, right? No, yes. So you're not just focusing on, okay, well, I got this process and it works in my backyard, but the reality is your backyard might not work 100% of the time. So it sounds like the process has to be a little more flexible in a sense, or not in the process out, but like where we look is flexible, but how we find is set.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Markets change all the time. The markets we look in this year won't be the same as the markets we look in next year.
Yeah.
You have to adapt.
And that might even be property type. I hear all the time, like for me, I had this feeling when I bought a property. So I live in Buffalo and that's where I started investing. And after like three or four properties there, I was like, I probably need to do this in other places. You know, like I found something that works, you know, and a lot of people are like, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I'm like, how many properties can I get here before I start to have pain? And so I started to like, I'm like, okay, where else should I go? And that's how SCR Insights kind of came about. But I'm glad I did that because the market has shifted and the properties I had at that time, I would not do well as short-term rentals today. They dropped significantly. And with all the regulations, Buffalo passes too, it'd be like, kind of like, you know, up. I say ship's creek, but to keep it clean. But anyway, but the reality is like being willing to understand the flow of how the market goes, but then have that process though that we know I can identify deals anywhere as long as I knew X, Y, and Z is key. So let's talk about what X, Y, and Z is for you. Okay. So what do you teach people? You talked about goals. Okay. So what's next for you when it comes? So if someone comes to you, all right, Sheila, I want to cash flow X amount because I've got to quit my W-2 or, you know, I need this time freedom or I'm trying to build wealth for my kids' college fund or whatever. They got a specific goal. It's not from a podcast. Now what? What do they do?
Next thing we do is really, you know, come up with a roadmap of how we're going to do this. Where are we going to look? What markets do we need to be in to meet your very specific goals? Not every market is good for everyone. I don't invest in the same markets you invest in. You don't invest in the same markets the next person invests in. So it's really defining what markets have the highest potential of having profitable properties that meet your individual criteria.
Okay. So what do you tell people who are like, I don't care. I just want to make as much money as possible. What's your word of wisdom to them?
Let's dive in and start looking at some markets and see how you feel about the markets after we know more about them. Because you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, I hear that a lot. And then I'm saying, okay, you know, you just want the highest amount of money possible. Let's look at this market. And a lot of times I get pushback there. Well, no, I kind of, you know, I was kind of hoping for a vacation market. I was kind of hoping for a beach market. So if that's all they're looking for is the most amount of money. You know, we have markets we can look in, but there's usually something else behind that as well. Some personal preference or something else that's driving them to purchase short-term rentals.
Sure. No, that makes sense.
When you're looking for new markets, what are you looking for specifically in those markets?
You know, I have my financial goals. Obviously, cash flow is something that I focus on more than cash on cash return. Markets that will produce well, but I'm also, you know, I'm a one plane ride person. I don't want to take two plane rides and a car ride to get to the market that I'm investing in. And that's a personal preference, which comes into play. I'm also looking for markets that are either emerging or, you know, established, but not, and I know, I hate the word saturation because it's not necessarily market level, but, you know, I'm looking for markets that I can see hard data on that have good potential to meet my specific goals.
Okay. Can you give me some examples? Like, are there certain markets, you don't have to give a whole bunch or anything, but are there certain markets you kind of have your eye on? And like, what, I guess, what characteristics, what other characteristics do they have that you really like about those markets?
Some of the markets, like I've been looking in more mountain national park markets right now for this next property. I have beach properties. I have ski properties. Do you like to have, you know, a diverse portfolio? I know. So if it's not broke, they'll fix it. That's true. But I'm also not buying in any of the markets that I already own in right now because those markets have changed.
Right.
So I've started looking in some of the mountain markets. For me, there is a little bit of personal preference in it at this point. It has to cash flow, but I also like vacation markets. I like places that I go with my family as well. And we're looking at, you know, markets that do well with the larger cabins and that type of property. So for me, it's a combination of things, personal preference and cash flow.
Okay. So once you've identified some markets that fit your goals and preferences and some of these other data metrics we just talked about, what do you do next? How do you find deals on them?
Find deals by knowing what you need to have in that market. You need to know, you know, what performs well in this market. What does it need to have in it to perform this way? Why is this property bringing in this revenue and this property is only bringing in this revenue? And then once you can identify that, you can look for properties that are for sale that either meet that criteria or have the potential of meeting that criteria. And when you really study and you understand the markets, you understand what you need to have in that market, the likelihood that you're going to find a profitable investment is much higher.
Gotcha. Can you give us some examples of things that you found in with your properties that stood out to you that were like, hey, yeah, this is something that drives revenue more. That's what I'm assuming you're talking about, driving revenue. So what have those properties been like? What did you see when you fixed all those properties?
Let's talk about my ski properties. Having that close access to the slopes is key there. I see, you know, there's a lot of properties on the outskirts of the ski areas that don't perform quite as well. Having the right amenities in them. Design and decor, you need to know, you know, what the standard is and what you need to have in that area to compete with your competition there. Knowing who you're catering to. Do you have families coming in or are you catering to couples? All of that plays into, you know, who's coming to your property? Why are they coming there? And how do you know that? And that's what we figure out together. I've been in my personal properties. Some of the things I've looked for, you know, even if they don't have everything they need when I purchase them, if they have the potential to add that and get to that level, then I see a potential in the property.
Okay. So give us some examples of your actual properties.
Okay. We'll stay with one of my ski properties here. When I purchased it, you know, it needed pretty significant work, not a full renovation, but I purchased it knowing that there was a lot of value that I could add there. Rather than seeing that it had everything it needed already, I knew that it had the right location, which was key. And I knew that the other things that it needed, you know, amenities and some renovations, design, decor, that I could add all of that myself and take a property that I was able to buy under market value and add that value to it so that it's a great performer now.
Okay. So, you know, I'm a numbers person. So I want to hear the numbers of this thing. It sounds cool. I love the concept. I love what you did. But what did you buy it for?
Okay. I bought this property for $385,000.
Okay.
and it's three bedroom, you know, really close to the ski slopes. Also, three bedroom and a loft, so we have a separate sleeping area there too, which plays into it. Has transportation back and forth to the ski slopes, which was also key in that area. Mm. Right after we bought it, we made some improvements to it, updated the furniture, design, decor, and similar units were already selling for about $435 to $450 at the time. We only put probably about $20,000 into it. So right there, we added value. And just by adding that, ours is one of the top rated properties in the area now. We were bought pretty much most of the time, year round, except for April. I tell everyone April's my slow month. We don't really have a slow season there.
mud season, right?
Yes. Yeah. As soon as the ski slopes close until it stops raining.
Yeah. Okay. So what were the renovation costs? What did you pay to renovate it and everything?
With renovating and everything that we upgraded, we were only in for about $25,000.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So what'd you renovate? What'd you do?
That one, again, wasn't a major renovation. Just it had nice features already. It just needed, you know, paint, some new flooring. We upgraded a bathroom, nothing too major.
Okay.
We haven't done major renovations, but that wasn't one of them.
did you find contractors in the area, or do you have your own team, or you do it, or?
On this one, it was pretty close by, only about an hour from where I live. So I did use some of my regular contractors that I work with.
Okay.
You know, when we've worked on some of our beach properties, we have had to find contractors out of state, and you know, we have a system for that too.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So that's key. I think that's huge. Everyone listening to this, like one of the biggest things that she said it a couple of times, is having a system or a process. So I'm going to ask a softball lob here question. Okay. Just tell me the effects that has changed for you when you've had a system in place. Like what did, with finding, with doing anything you're doing, how much time does that save you?
It saves you infinite time. I mean, it's similar to building a house, right? I could call a supplier, have them drop off all the materials. And if I just start throwing up walls and I don't have a blueprint, my chances of ever successfully completing that house are pretty slim.
Right.
But if I have a blueprint and I have, you know, clear, sequential, actionable steps to take, the likelihood that I'll succeed and finish that house is much more. And it's no different with running a business, because that's what this is, a short-term rental business. If you have a plan and you have steps that you can follow every time to get to that end result, it saves you a ton of time and it really increases your likelihood of success.
Gotcha. And did you, like, these systems and processes, like obviously you mentioned at the beginning, you spent a lot of time researching, a lot of times. Did you document them? How did you like remember? How did you get this down in a way that created like a repeatable template that you could go out and do over and over and over?
Lots of spreadsheets, Kenny.
Lots of spreadsheets.
Okay. I document everything.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, like, and then I guess a kind of a follow-up to that is, for your systems, are you looking for just value add plays? Like, is that like your strategy? Like what's kind of your strategy from the way that you're looking?
Most of my experience has been with value adds, but I have bought properties that didn't need much at all. You know, if you find the right deal, it's the right price, the numbers work, right location, has everything you need. I've done it both ways. So yes, that's one of my strategies, but not my only strategy.
I love it. All right. So being diverse in the strategies for hunting too is really important. The other question I was going to ask you was, so let's say I'm a listener and I'm like, well, cool, you've got that construction background. That's really advantageous. Like, I don't have that. What do I need to do? Do I just need to save more money and go? Is there anything out there? Like, how do I, if I have a small budget, say $500,000 or less, how do I find a deal? I feel like I'm limited if I can't just go in and throw in a bunch of design, decor, and amenities.
Well, we find markets together that meet your criteria, that are in your purchase price budget and still have the potential to meet your goals. They're out there, and sometimes it, you know, it takes knowing how to identify and finding a deal in those markets too. But they're out there and you can do it without having to spend a ton of money on renovations or time on renovations. And design and decor, I mean, there's usually something you have to add to it. We very rarely find anything that's completely turnkey, but pretty close to turnkey is out there in most budgets.
Sure. All right. So let's say, let's kind of keep moving through your process here. So you know what works in the markets. So you've got your markets, you got your goals, you know what works in the markets. How are you evaluating? Like, how do you know that, cool, I found something that has those attributes, but how do I know that the numbers are going to make sense, that they're going to add up? What do you specifically do?
Well, very detailed on numbers and underwriting properties and understanding that underwriting process. So knowing, you know, a revenue range of where your property is going to come in, and we use a range because you never know that it's going to come in an exact number. It's going to come in somewhere in a range. But if you can figure that out and know that and have it backed by data, you can feel confident when you run a pro forma, run your numbers, and underwrite the deal that you're using real information. You can trust this information, and it gives you the confidence that you need to go ahead and purchase a property.
Gotcha. Okay. When you're underwriting, what are you looking at? So you talked about gross revenue, but are you looking at anything else to help understand the deal?
When we're underwriting, we're looking at revenue. We're looking at all of the expenses that go into, you know, setting up and running that property. We're looking at your debt service coverage, which is your mortgage. We're also looking at other, you know, exterior things. For instance, if someone bought a condo, there's a whole separate set of underwriting that we go mm-hmm. through, which includes, you know, HOA evaluations and everything else. If you're buying a house, you know, we need to know about inspections and what type of loan you're using. There's a lot that goes into the underwriting process that we go through. But once you understand it and you know it, it's repeatable just like everything else.
Couple of follow-ups. A big question that I get a lot is, should I go see a property before I put in an offer on it?
I'm a believer of getting eyes on a property before you close on it. I like to go sometime during the inspection period.
Okay, so you put an offer on a property and yes. then go put eyes on it after.
Yes.
Okay. Why?
Because pictures aren't always accurate. And, you know, agents...
Well, why do you wait? Some people feel like they have to go before they even put in an offer.
Because you miss out on good deals that way. If I'm putting in an offer in a competitive market and I wait until 3 weeks later when I can make it down there to see the property, it's probably gone by then.
Gotcha. Do you feel like that's pretty normal? Some people are like, oh, is that like sneaky? You know, I've heard that before too. Like,
no, I don't think it is. If everything is what they said it is in the listing and the pictures are true to what it actually looks like, then I have the intention of purchasing that property. But if I get there, or, you know, we have our inspections and something's way off or there's a major issue with the property, then you do still have that out during your contingency period too. And I know that varies by state and you have to understand the contingency period in each state, but
it's a great time. It's also a great time to negotiate as well.
Yes.
What X, Y, and Z aren't up to, you know, let's get some credits, concessions, things like that. We're going to have to fix this. And it might be a way to get additional credits and make the deal better or sweeter. Yeah,
absolutely.
So that's good to know. Your beach properties, though, your beach property. So when you had contract, did you do the same thing? Did you put them under contract first and then go and check them out? Or did you go down? Because then you had to do some renovations, right? So what did you do there?
Yeah, I had both of them under contract before I saw the properties.
Gotcha.
Went there later. I have agents do virtual walkthroughs, very detailed.
Yeah.
Not to open it up and showing the insides of cabinets, turning the water on, you know,
yeah.
everything we can possibly.
That's a big one. No, but turning the water on, yes. I had two people that were like, oh, well, they didn't have the water on and, you know, they didn't find out the issue and then they closed on the property and then there were some plumbing issues. And I was like, oh, no. And so anyway.
They don't have the water on. Why?
Right. One with a toilet, a bathroom and the basement they had to tear up. The other one was a pool they had an uh-huh. issue with. So they have the water on.
Yeah, I believe it.
always got to turn that water on. Make sure.
Yes.
So. sure. Okay. So you've got it under contract and you're doing you're in that contingency period. Are you walking through with a contractor to figure out the expenses and everything? Like, how are you updating your numbers throughout? Like, what are you doing to make sure that it truly is going to cash flow at the end of the day?
I do have contractors meet me occasionally, depending on the scale of the project. but it's good to at least have someone come through and be able to give you estimated numbers on it mm-hmm. before you're out of that contingency period. And I found most of the time, you know, sellers are open to that. If they're not, you know, I've done it during the inspection too, during the home inspection when you already have someone there. And that's another thing I'm very big on, being there for the inspections. Every time I have a home inspection, I'm there for it, whether I'm buying or selling.
Gotcha. Okay. That's really interesting. That's good. That's a good point. Do you like walking through with the inspector?
I like walking through with the inspector, and I like to trust but verify. I had an inspector in a house we were selling once tell our buyer that he thought the insulation in the attic was asbestos. And it was cellulose. We know our contractor put it there. But yeah. If you're not there to catch these things, you know, they can cause you a lot of problems later on.
Wow. So you actually, so properties you sell, you walk around with their inspector.
I do. I go to the inspections. I had a sewer inspection that went really bad too, like that. The sewer inspector was using the wrong size line on an outside sewer line and telling the buyer was there also. And he was explaining to her that the whole driveway would need dug up and, you know, everything else. And I looked at him and I said, you're using the wrong size line. That's never going to go through there.
Yeah.
He argued with me, but you know, we got someone else in there and everything was fine with it. So, you know, trust but verify with these guys.
I like that. Interesting. So if you're selling a property, it's something to definitely consider.
Something, yes, on either side.
Yep. So, I mean, just out of curiosity, are you like in the moment telling them, hold on, like that's not a, you know, or is it?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes. Yeah. If I see something or they say something that I don't think is accurate, call them out on it.
Yeah, that's good.
Because if you can address it there, it's better to address it there than have it show up on the inspection report if it's not accurate.
Right. Yeah, because they're going to see it and then you're going to be like, oh, and try to go back and forth and explain and then they might walk because they're too scared. So I get that. So, okay. Yeah, I'm sure it goes both ways too. You know, inspector says something and then you get a contractor out there and they're like, actually, that's not the problem. It's this.
Yes.
So I've heard that too. So, All right. Well, that's okay. So when you do your underwriting, what about financing? I think a big problem I see a lot of people don't know is at what point should I try to figure out my financing? If I'm trying to find a deal in 45 days, do I do it at the very beginning? Do I wait till I have something under contract? When should I figure out my financing piece?
Right away. You need to know financing you're going into the deal with.
Okay.
And it happens a lot though. You know, people under contract and they have no idea what type of loan they're using, what they qualify for. So right away is what I tell everyone, you know, that as soon as you can get pre-approved and know, you know, how much you can be financed for, if you're going to use a 10% down loan, it's taking into consideration your debt to income ratio. You need to understand how much you can finance there. If you have to switch over to a DSCR because you didn't do that ahead of time, that can change your numbers completely.
Yeah.
As soon as possible.
As soon as possible. I love it. Okay. All right. Let's go into some advice giving, like just some general advice. Like what's some of the best advice you give some of your clients that you feel like, you know, beginners need to hear that you see pretty commonly?
You know, take a step back and let's kind of start over and let's go through your goals together and figure it out. Because I find a lot of people are they're not having trouble finding properties because of a lack of trying. Mm-hmm. They're looking. They're using some source of data, most of them anyways, but they don't understand how to use the data. They don't really know what their specific goals are. And I like to take a step back and come up with a plan first to sit down and say, you know, that this is what we're going to find and here's how we're going to do it. And I find that if people can do that and they can, you know, take that step backwards and kind of reboot and go through the steps that we show them that they're successful in finding properties.
Yeah, I love it. Like you're basically saying, look, let's come up with your own system and processes so that you can repeat it.
Yes.
I love that.
Because everyone has different goals and everyone has different preferences. It's not a one size fits all thing.
Yeah, I love it. All right. That's good. That's really good advice. All right, cool. Well, Sheila, anything else you want to add? Anything to how to find a cash flow deal in 45 days?
Talk to us.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah. So everybody listening, just so you know, so Sheila is one of the consultants with SDR Insights. And she helps what 20 people a month or yes. whatever, like find deals
right around there.
Yeah. So she's very experienced and has obviously from just this conversation, is very systematized, like has her processes, mm-hmm. has her way of doing it. And I love hearing that. And I love seeing the success stories from the clients who walk away like with properties and they're like, finally, you know? So don't go about it blindly. That's one takeaway from this conversation. I think that's really big for me is when you're entering into something new, okay, there's a lot of guesswork. So you kind of have there's a fork in the road here. You either try to figure it out yourself or you associate or basically work with somebody who knows what they're doing, like a mentor or coach or consultant. And that's what she does. So that's huge. And it saves people so much time. So if you value your time, then, you know, you need to talk to Sheila. So, and the way to do that, guys, you just go to STR Insights and click apply and says speak with an expert and you schedule some time to chat. So anyway, this concludes this episode of Cashflow Positive. I hope that you guys learned a lot from this on how to find cash flowing deals in 45 days. I took away some really good stuff, even though I talk to Sheila all the time, but even for myself and, you know, the journey, it's hearing it like spoken out from a different perspective, but getting to the same result is critical. And so thank you so much, Sheila. Thanks for sharing your story, your background and how you do everything.
Yeah. Thank you, Kenny.
Thanks. All right. As always, feel free to leave a review. We love reviews and feedback, and I will see you guys on the next episode.